Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of our program, Day to Be Different. It's wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, Midway 1548, Satellite Islam, and on the DSTV, Bouquet 826. And it's been quite a topsy-turvy week. We've had four seasons in 1 week. And I'm not too sure, but they're still freezing out there. But we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, and that's JJ from Garden World, and he's going to share lots and lots of insights into the world of gardening. Hi, good morning, JJ.
Good morning, Ishmael. You are quite right. That was four seasons in 1 week, and I think we are still stuck in August.
You know, I was just saying last week, we had the winds that came on time. Yes, you know, it came the 1st of August, the winds were blowing. And then in between now, was it the first week of September, we've had our rains, but in between we had our winter seasons coming back, so four seasons in one. What does it say to our plants? Hello, my friends, are we ready for some or not?
I think the weather is telling our plants just to hold back a bit longer, just to bring back that, just to stop them from sprouting as quick as what they would have sprouted, you know. So always we as South Africans, we always want everything to happen yesterday, you know. And I think what we should understand is that with a plant, no, it will be better if it happens tomorrow, because tomorrow it will actually be a little bit warmer, you know. Tomorrow, or in a week's time, it's actually going to be better for the plant. So don't worry, winter will definitely leave us soon, and yeah, also spring is supposed to start soon.
You know, I was looking at some of the reports and saying that our weather patterns, when we talk about rain, they say we're still not getting the rains that we would or ought to have got. They're still talking about low rainfalls in most parts of the country. And I was just looking at something that's coming in from Karoo that's gone through the worst drought in more than two centuries.
Well, the Karoo has gone through the worst drought in a couple of centuries, and the Northern Cape has got snow at the moment, which they haven't had for many, many years, you know. So, yeah, unfortunately, the weather is one of those things that you cannot predict, and that's the last job I would want to have, is to be a weather reporter or a weather predictor, you know. And especially with them saying that the El Nino effect is going to affect us again this year, that we will have a drier season, that doesn't really predict very good news for most of South Africa.
Now, when we're going in, before we go on to the El Nino and the type of plants and so forth, I know you've got a stunning, stunning display at the moment. You've got your Clivia show. Tell us about this Clivia, because when you look at the Clivia, you know, it's, most of the year it just looks green, you know, leaves, that's all you see. And suddenly, lo and behold, come, you know, the end of July, beginning of August, you see this beautiful, and towards the end, when it comes into September, full bloom. Tell us about the Clivia show and the Clivia itself.
Well, so the Clivia is itself, very often people mistake them with Agapanthus. However, the leaves are a lot darker green. They prefer a shadier spot where your Agapanthus would prefer a sunnier spot. But it's as you say, you know, most of the year you'll have a green, lush foliage, dark green foliage, and suddenly it just pops up into color once a year. Often twice a year you'll get some flowers coming through as well, but once a year especially the whole thing will pop up into color, and it just looks amazing. And it's as if you've been waiting this whole year for this birth of the flower, and suddenly the birth of the flower has appeared. So our Clivia show that's on at the moment looks amazing here at Garden World. We've got probably about, yesterday I counted, we had roughly about 10,000 Clivias here, so I think we're probably down to about 7,000 today, which is still amazing. If you look at the varieties, the colors, the special exhibition plants, it is really something to see, you know. So, and what makes it so interesting is, you know, very often if you cross-pollinate something within a year or so, you'll see if your cross-pollination was actually successful. But with your Clivias, it takes a good 5 to 7 years before the Clivia grower, the breeder, knows if it was successful or not, you know. So that's what makes Clivia so special. You know, it's a time-years process. It's something that's really, you need to have the patience for it. And once you've got the patience for it, you will succeed with it.
Now, when you talk about Clivia, you know, the first thing that springs to mind is bright oranges, and then some gone to yellows. But with the breeders and hybrids, have gone to a variety of colors. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we've always only known the orange, and then suddenly we got to know the yellow, and suddenly everybody wanted the yellow Clivia. And then a couple of years ago, a peach Clivia came out, and that was the most amazing one on the market. And then they started going over with bronzes and greens and pinks. So there's all different colors at the moment. Even your dark orange close to red, just as amazing.
Now, while it's an amazing plant, what's also fascinating about this particular plant is that it does well where other plants do not, and that's under shade. It's a very much, it tolerates the intensity of the shade. Is that right?
Yeah, even though the plant can grow in a very, very dark shaded area, a very deep shaded area, it does need a little bit of bright light or even sunlight at some stage during the day to produce proper flowers. You know, if you were to keep a clivia in a very, very dark shaded area, unfortunately, that's not going to flower well for you. The flower really it will come once the sun, once the light is enough. So if you've got a problem with your clivias not flowering, it could be that they are in too much shade. And very often you'd find that your clivia flower would be very short, that the stem would be very short, and the flowers would be hidden in between the leaves, and that very often happens when the sun is too much. Then there's no real reason for it of pushing out a new, a longer flower stem. So, yeah, light is important, but yes, as you rightfully say, it can take a very deep shaded area.
The other advantage about this is the perennial, so it comes up year after year. Is that right?
With very little effort, it comes up year after year. It is indigenous, it is water-wise, it actually needs very little water, except when it's in flower, you'd water it a bit more often, but normally you'd water a clivia like once every 2 to 3 weeks, you know, but if it is in flower, probably water it about twice a week. Very interesting with the watering, that if you want to grow the seeds, if you want it to be pollinated and if you want to grow the seeds, very important not to water with an overhead irrigation that washes all the pollen off the flower. Rather put the hose pipe down next to the plant and give it a good drenching, a soil wetting, than what you are giving it a leaf and flower wetting.
Okay, so you can transplant those seeds, or if those seeds sprout, or, you know, drop off, it will, you know, germinate. The watch point here is to make sure that it doesn't get watered from the top, but rather that because it washes the pollen, is that what would stop it from being propagated?
It's what will stop it from being pollinated, so that you've got viable seed. So yes, that's what will stop it from being propagated, correct. But the seed grows very, very easily. You know, if you wanted to ever succeed with a plant, you know, when you were in school, you succeeded with a bean. once you've grown up, you will succeed with a clivia, because the seed grows so easily, you know. You can literally break open those seed pods and you can lay them on the ground in a nice moist area where it's not too moist, where it's not too damp, around your clivia plants where they are, loosen up the soil slightly, and then take the seeds itself and just push them into the ground slightly. It takes about 4 weeks to 10 weeks for the seeds to germinate, and then it probably takes about another 3 to 5 to 7 years, depending on the variety of when they will flower. But you know, that's one way for you of multiplying your clivias. Of course, if you were to do it a professional way, you would be getting a professional seeding mix, and you will be putting it into trays, and you'll keep it one side where you can look after it better, you know, and that'll grow a lot easier for you. But the main thing with your seeds is do not overwater. Once you overwater, they die. They do not like the water. They rot away.
And the other thing about the clivia, you know, it has that wow factor. So if you can take it, if you've got it in a pot, you can bring it out, you know, on display somewhere and then take it back again. And it wouldn't it wouldn't affect the clivia, is that right?
No, not at all. It will be a beautiful display, and you can move it around. As long as you don't move it from a very sunny area to a very shady area, or a very shady to a very sunny area, you know, try and keep the area more or less the same. But you're right, and you can move it around, and it will flower beautifully for you. And once you've got it in a pot and you want to transplant it into the garden, they transplant very well, very, very successfully.
Now, you know, you've got this clivia display on. Tell us something about this, you know, display. It's open to the public, am I right?
It is open to the public. It's 28 per person going through the display. Garden World makes nothing out of it. It's all the funds are going towards the Clivia Club and towards putting the show together. So it's literally for nothing. There's probably about, I would say, 300 plants on display, which is their special plants, which is their prize-winning plants of the different clivia growers. We've got about 30 different clivia growers here at Garden World, and each clivia grower enters his special plants, his prize-winning plant. And then obviously in the main area, then the clivia growers will then also sell the product to the customers. So if you wanted a special color, or if you wanted to grow your own from seed, if you wanted seedlings, now is the time to go and find those seeds and seedlings, and then you can grow them yourselves. You know, then you can also get first-hand knowledge from the clivia growers, from the producers, of how to do it correctly. What kind of fertilizer to use, what kind of sprays and poisons to use, and if you want to join the clivia club, I mean, now's the right time also to join the clivia club, because now you can see what the clivia growers are all about. Why are they so passionate about it?
Now, when you talk about clivia and, you know, the clivia plant and so forth, it's 20 rand you can go in, but you can also buy some of the plants. And, you know, I'm not too sure, but this is, you know, the garden show that you had last month. Would that still be open to the public if they came to see the clivia display? Would they still be allowed to go into that section or not?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, no. The display gardens is still on. We had to break down the main exhibit or the main event, and we had to break down the kiddies gardens because that's where the clivia show is happening. So the rest of the gardens is still open to the public. You're welcome to come and view it. But the clivias at the moment, you know, it is really something special to see, because you've got clivias selling for anything from about 10 rands a clivia to about 7,000 rands a clivia. You know, so you can really go through and see what is so special about it.
You know, I'm sorry, so when people come in today, it's not just for the clivias. You know, they can do so much. There's so much to enjoy when you're at Garden World. You're going to see this stunning display of clivias. And if you still have a little bit of time, you could still wander around if you haven't still visited the show gardens. Is that right?
Correct. And it looks like the wind is also dying down a bit. So, yeah, I was going to say earlier today that Garden World has moved about 2 kilometers south. But the wind has died down, yeah. It's busy dying down, and I think we're going to have a beautiful day.
Now, you know, besides the clivias, and, you know, we're going to talk about some of the other things that you've raised. One of the things that you've spoken about was the El Nino effect. And I think that means lower rainfalls. We've learned in the past, and I think now that we're entering this, you know, the growing season for many of our aesthetic plants, what advice do we give people? Whatever plants should they put in? Should they look at just water-wise, or should they be looking at indigenous? Take us through some of those.
You know, there's a couple of stigmas about indigenous planting that everybody thinks that indigenous planting is always all water-wise, you know, but unfortunately, indigenous South Africa has got such a diverse climate that we cannot comb the entire country over the one comb. You know, we can't say that everything that grows in Natal, which is indigenous to Natal and indigenous to South Africa, will grow in the Northern Cape. You know, so you've got to be very careful when you assume that when you plant an indigenous plant in your garden that it will survive. So it's always good to go and chat to your nurseryman and to find out, if you were to plant this plant in your garden, what is the right conditions for it? Would it need a lot of water? Would it need less water? So we've always been speaking about making your garden more water-wise. And yes, by planting succulents and less water-thirsty plants, yeah, you will do a lot better in your garden, especially at the moment while it is so dry and when they are expecting it to be a very, very dry summer. But if you were to zone your garden correctly and you were to put the plants that does need more watering, if you were to put them together and you were to put the plants that need less watering together, obviously you will have a lot more success in your garden. If you were to work something like your water-holding gel, water-retaining gel into the flower beds, or you were to take a cocoa peat and work that into the flower beds, again, that will retain a lot of moisture as well. I mean, I'm at the moment busy digging in water-retaining gel into my entire garden. You know, it's costing me 400 rand, and if I was to water my garden, just 1 week's worth watering would cost me about 250, 300 rand. So I'll definitely be saving a lot on water very, very soon. But it's the kind of thing that you need to start investigating. What do I need in my garden? How can I make my garden more water-friendly, water-wise? And how can I make sure that those plants that do need more water will still get the amount of water that they do need? I think the biggest factor that we as South Africans do not use enough in our gardens is mulching. So if you were to compare us with Australia, the average Australian gardener uses 127 times more wood in his lifetime than what the South African gardener uses in his garden. Why? Because they mulch each and every garden bed that's exposed to the sun. They they're a lot warmer than what we are, and their gardens still thrive. Why? Because they keep their gardens moist. So looking at the El Nino effect, if you want to counteract that El Nino effect in your own garden, there is ways for you of doing it. But come and chat to us. Let's have a word about it and let's see what you can do in your garden to make it more water wise.
Thank you very much for that. I think that's so important. But the thing that you raised, another thing, you know, is with regards to water retaining gel. Would that be sort of a jelly type of substance, or would it be more liquidish? How would you dig it into the ground?
Okay, so it looks exactly like sugar, and it is exactly the same product which you will find in a baby's nappy. So if you were to go and dig it into your garden, remember, it's got to be dug in. You can't just put it on top because it can't be exposed to the sun. The sun will break it down in no time. So you've got to literally go and open up a few areas, sprinkle the gel in there, and then water it very well. Once you water it, it will swell up. You don't have to first liquidify it, but if you were to do certain areas, and it would be easier for you to first dissolve it and get it moist and then work with a proper gel instead of just a powder, you can do that as well. Remember, whenever you are working in the dry gel and whenever you start watering it, it does swell 600 times its own size in water. So it will absorb 600 times its own weight. So make sure that you do dig it in deep enough and don't dig too much in certain clumps, because you'll have your garden popping up in places.
Hello, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can still hear you.
Sorry about that. Now, you know, we're talking about this water retention. Is it good enough for container plants as well, and for herbs and, you know, food, so forth, for all our vegetables and so forth, or is it just for aesthetic plants?
And there's no problem for food whatsoever. It doesn't do anything to the food. It cannot change the food or the plant's DNA whatsoever. It is not bad. It's not negative at all. If you were to use containers, or if you were to use it in containers, there's actually a very easy way for you of doing it. And that is by taking a stick and looking at every, say, 2 hours on the pot. So what you do is every 2 hours, take a stick, shove it into the soil as deep as possible, and then take the dry powder, pour it in so that it can go in nice and deeply, and then you close it up with soil on top. Once you close it up with soil on top, and you water it, it will swell beautifully. So if you were to, say, make a hole at 12 o'clock, at 2 o'clock, at 4 o'clock, all the way around the outside of your pot, on those couple of hours, you'll actually find that you are watering the entire root system of the pot, and you are wetting it thoroughly.
That's a fantastic idea. And just to going back again to, you know, when you spoke about indigenous and perennial, and you said it would be better if it was endemic to make sure it comes from a particular area. So if you're talking, if you're trying to bring things from the fynbos, it would not necessarily do it. Is that right?
Yeah, no, you are 100% correct. Remember, an endemic means that it only comes from a certain area. So endemic does not necessarily mean that you will only find, let's go to the botanical term. Endemic means it only is found in nature in one specific area. So what we normally as horticulturists would, if we were to speak to the layman, and we would say, take plants which is endemic to your area. It is more area specific to your area. It does not necessarily mean that you'll only find it with you, but it is the kind of thing that will grow in your environment. Okay. If you were to look at what the professor said about endemic, it is found in one area and one area only. You know, so a lot of plants will be endemic to the entire South Africa, and other plants will only be endemic to the Witwatersrand area. You know, and that's the difference. But we as horticulturists, what we are trying to teach people to do is when we say plant something endemic, plant something which will be used to your environment, used to your area, used to your climate, used to your rainfall, your soil, all of that.
And if you're going to plant it, it's to mimic that environment. So if you bring something from the fynbos to mimic that environment so that these plants will have an opportunity to grow and, you know, to give you the necessary results. So if you have, for example, let's take the fynbos. If you bring it, it doesn't have similar conditions, then perhaps some of the proteas will not do, you know, well. Is that correct?
You are 100% correct there. So you've got to actually mimic. You've got to try and recreate the environment that they are used to. You know, so often people would come to me and they'll ask me, right, I want to plant some fynbos in my garden. What is the do's and the don'ts? The do's is make sure that you plant it with enough acid compost, because wherever they thrive in the tape area, they get the soil is a lot more acidic. So what you've got to look at is taking some acid compost, mixing that into the garden. What you've also got to remember is that those plants very often are from a winter rainfall area. You know, most of the Western Cape and Southern Cape is winter rainfall. So yes, you will be watering it more in the winter than what you would be doing in the summer. So there is a few do's and don'ts that you must remember about specific plants for specific areas.
Before we go for a break, let's just do this last one with regards to the perennial. Now, when you talk about perennial, would there be enough of the, you know, aesthetic perennials where it comes up every year and gives you a beautiful show? Just name one or two. I know you'd off your head. What would you suggest people would do? That's water wise, it's perennial, and they bring color.
You know, there's quite a few of them that actually does very well. And I think this year especially is the year of the osteospermum, which is your Cape daisy. And those are perennial plants, those are flowering plants, those are indigenous plants. And I've got some osteospermums here in my gardens at Garden World that's been lasting for the last 3 years, you know. So, and they've been flowering non-stop every year. So that's the kind of perennial that you should look at to plant in your garden, because they really do well. If you look at your common old Agapanthus, that is a perennial that is water-wise. Yes, once a year, twice a year, it does pop out in color, and it's amazing to have in your garden. So there's two that you can look at. First of all, your common old Agapanthus, all the new varieties that's available, and then secondly, osteospermum, your Cape daisies.
I was also thinking of Tulbachia, the wild garlic. Would that be also classified as something like that?
Oh, it's an amazing one. Yeah, definitely a fantastic filler. It's a very good insect repeller. And yeah, no, it's definitely a very, very water-wise plant. So if you were to plant something in your garden which is water-wise, which will give you some color, which is a great filler for the garden beds, wild garlic Tulbachia is a fantastic one.
We're going to go for a break. When we come back, we'll continue. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you just tuned in, my name is Ismail Riyawa. It's a program Dare to Be Different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming Midway 1548 Satellite Islam and on the DSTV 826. And we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, and that's JJ van Rensburg, coming out from one of the most beautiful garden centers I've been to. And we've spoken about the Clivia show that is happening currently. Hi, good morning, JJ.
Good morning, good morning.
Thank you very much, and we've got a couple of questions and queries that have come in before we continue with it. The number to dial this morning, 854-1548, any queries, any questions that you have, you could pose, and JJ would help us. The first one I have, JJ, is cycads are turning brown on the edges. What do you think has gone wrong?
You know, that's normally just a case of overwatering or drying out very much, because, yeah, unfortunately, it's 9 out of 10 times it will be overwatering or bad drainage. So if you are in an area which the soil do not drain very well, do not water as much. Do feed your cycads. Make sure that you get a lot of new growth coming through, because once you've got that new growth coming through, obviously you will get rid of the brown tips in a different way. But, yep, normally it will be just a case of either standing water or just being watered too much.
And, you know, cycads are also one of those very forgiving plants. You know, they do well, and if you've forgotten and neglected them, they would still do well. You know, they would still thrive once you've given the correct feeding regimen. Is that correct?
Oh, that is correct. And, you know, nowadays there is a specific food that you use for your cycads called Cycad Boost. You know, if you were to use your Cycad Boost around your plants, you will get double to three times the amount of leaves as what you would normally get every year. So definitely, no, it's something to look at, is your cycle booster. And, you know, what you are, you're mentioning something there which is very important, to feed specific. You know, very often people do not feed specific. People will be putting down fertilizer and thinking that, yeah, once I put down fertilizer, it will be fine for the plants. But it could be that you are either feeding the wrong fertilizer to the wrong plant, or it could be that you are feeding a plant for more root growth instead of more flower growth, you know. So I think it's really something that we should teach people to feed more specific. If I can elaborate on this a little bit.
Yeah, good on. You know, I think it's important that you just take us, because many of us come and say we want a 3-2-3, but we don't know what the 3-2-3 does, and we don't understand why it's, what's the 3 and the 2 and the 3, or whatever it is. Take us through some of that.
That's correct. So if you look at a 2-3-2, which is a general fertilizer, remember your fertilizer are always in the same formulation. The first one is always your nitrogen. That's your N. Your second one is your phosphates. That's your P. And your third one is your potassium. That's your K. So what you've got to remember is that your nitrogen is for leaf development. So if you were to want more greenery in the garden, you would be using something which is high in nitrogen, like, for instance, a 713 or a 411. Okay, those are fertilizers which the nitrogen is a lot higher in it. So if you were to plant something and you wanted more root development, you'll be using the P, which is a 232 or a 321. Remember, that's high in phosphate, so you'll get more root development from it. If you wanted to get more flowers, or if you wanted to give your plants a stronger cell, you would give it more potassium. And that'll be like a 315 or an 815. You know, that formulation gives your plant a lot more potassium, which makes it stronger, but it also gives you more flowers and more fruit.
If you want to be more specific, for example, I'm starting out a vegetable patch and so forth, and the food I should give, the potassium should be the last, and that's the one I should be concentrating on. Is that correct?
Yeah, initially you'll be concentrating on your phosphates to get better root development, and then later on you'll be focusing more on your potassium for better flowers and better fruit.
And if I was going to do something like trees and lawns?
Trees and lawns, always root and stem development. So in always your 3-2-1 or a 2-3-2. Later on in the year, once you've got more water, once there's a lot more rain, once your root is nice and strong, then you can go over to a nitrogen, high nitrogen, like for instance a 713 or the old LAN.
Now, you know, a common complaint I have, lots of people say, we bought a plant and we've, now it's in the ground, it's established. What do? We only give them water. They forget there's a food regimen to it. Many a time you find they've invested so much money at the beginning of the season, and towards the end of the season, the plant doesn't give them the yield that they want. And one of the reasons that they have, the major reasons, that they don't feed. But you mean you've got to feed? You know, that's the type of questions you get. Do you mean you've got to feed? And they don't understand that there is definitely a regimen that you've got to follow. You've got to give these plants food from time to time. Is that right?
Well, I always ask people, what would you feel like if you were to only get water? And also, what's very important is to alternate your food. You know, I think I'm the kind of guy that loves my steak, but I think after 2 days, I'll also be tired of steak. You know, so whenever you are feeding your plants, always try and remember what you fed with so that you can alternate them, that you don't always feed the same feed over and over and over. It's not only about what the plant will develop with the kind of food that you are using. What it will also look at is the binding salts, which is normally the additions or the additives that get put in with the fertilizer. If you have a lot of additives that stays behind and you have the same additives every single time, you will be poisoning your soil without even knowing it. So therefore, we always recommend people to alternate the food between organic, between synthetic, and obviously different organics, different synthetics. Don't only have one fertilizer.
So what we learned today is that when you are there, you know, doing a selection of plants, always buy at least 3 different varieties of
plant food.
plant food. Yes, that's right. So whatever it is, and speak to the person and say, look, this is what I'm going to do, and what 3 do you suggest? And maybe they'll give you an idea. So you buy one for root, one good for fruit, and one for, so you have at least you have that on hand, and it would give you. Again, if you bought a bag, would that last you for a season if it's a small garden?
Well, it all depends on what the size of the garden is and what the kind of fertilizer is that you are buying. So, yes, one bag should be more than enough for one season, because you'll only be feeding about, at the most, once every 10 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks. So that's about once every two and a half months. So, one bag should be more than enough for you per food, for your entire garden, if you've got a small garden.
Yeah, so we're talking about 3 different types. So we're talking of one for root growth, one for food growth. So you have different ones, at least 3 bags. And I think that's what we need to understand, that if you are going to go into this gardening and wanting to have a success, then this is one of the things that you should add to your basket when you're at the garden center the next time.
That is good. And it's also very important every now and then to also look at a liquid or a soluble, water-soluble fertilizer. Because, yes, you can be putting down a organic or a pellet fertilizer, but very often you want to have a bit of a quicker result. And that's when you'll go over to a water-soluble fertilizer, which whatever you are putting down today will start working later today, you know. So don't only work on your slow-release granular fertilizers or organic fertilizers. Do use others as well. Do use your solubles, because very often your solubles also contain a lot of your trace elements. And trace elements is very important when it gets to plant nutrition, because without trace elements, your plants cannot absorb your macro elements. So even though it sounds like you're just wanting to have a basket full of food, but you do need to have the entire spectrum. Otherwise, you can be putting down lots of fertilizer and it will be pretty useless.
The other question that I've had with regards to transplanting of a mature tree, tell us something about that.
Transplanting of mature trees, normally the best time of the year to do that in would be in winter. If you were to do it in spring or summer, you've got to remember that you've got to cut the plant back very well and make sure that you use some of that water retaining gel in a new hole when transplanting it to make sure that the plant gets good contact, the roots gets good contact with the water. As soon as there's a air pocket and the roots dries out, your plant cannot be transplanted successfully. So make sure water is the most important.
And once it's been planted, can you still dig in the gel?
Yes, you can still dig in the gel. However, it's a lot easier doing it before, but yes, you will be able to still dig in the gel.
Many people have now moved into smaller environments and have less space for gardening, and they have moved into container gardening. Can you move containers around when you have established plants, especially we're looking at more the citrus family?
Bit of a difficult one, because if you are moving it around, you know, the main thing whenever you are transplanting plants or moving plants is that you've got to keep the orientation the same. Now, in layman's terms, it means keeping north on north and south on south. You know, that the side that's used to the northern side, keep it on the northern side. But I think there's a better way of describing it, and rather saying that the side that's used to the sun, keep that on the sunnier side. Because yes, you could be moving it from a early morning sun to a late afternoon sun position, but then the side that is getting the early morning sun should be getting the late afternoon sun, because then you know that your plants are used to the sun. If you were to put it in an area where the sun is not, or where the plant is not used to the sun, yes, unfortunately, the plant will suffer sunburn, and plants do suffer from sunburn, especially if they're not used to the sun. So yes, if you are moving it around, just make sure that you are keeping the light requirements the same, or the light what it's used to the same.
I had a query from a listener wanting to know about borage. Is that available, and where would, or is it not something that garden centers and nurseries would be stocking?
Unfortunately, borage is one of those that you don't find easily. You know, many years ago, you would find a lot of it, but nowadays it's not often grown, or it's not supplied to all the different nurseries. So if you are a borage lover, just phone your local nursery and ask them to get you some. They should be able to.
And then the use of borage, is it a medicinal herb or a culinary herb?
It's actually a culinary herb, and also they make teas with it.
Okay, so it's not easily available. The question with regards to care of the lawn, many people have now scarified the lawns, and it's already, we've had the first rains, things are low and going to have turned green. And what advice would we give them?
Unfortunately, the first green that you normally find on your lawns is weeds. So I'd recommend you first to get a weed killer and to spray the entire lawn with your weed killer, especially in the areas where it's very green, because that will definitely be a more weeded area. So you do get different kinds of weed killers that you can use on the lawn, but make sure that when you go to the nursery, take a bit of your lawn with you, because people would often think that they've just got cocoa, that you can't just spray any weed killer on any lawn. So make sure that you take a bit of the lawn, take a bit of the weed through to your local nursery and show them what you've got, so that they can give you the correct product to use on the correct lawn. Because yes, unfortunately, if you are using the wrong product on the wrong lawn, you'll kill your entire lawn. But it's not that bad. You know, if you do take it through to a nursery, they should be able to give you the right product for the right area. Now, unfortunately, yes, our lawns are going to need more water. So you've got to make sure that you do start watering your lawn a little bit more often. But please remember, rather water very early in the mornings, so that your lawn does have enough time to absorb that moisture before the harsh sunlight do come through. I'm not a big fan of watering at night. Very often people say, yes, I'm watering my lawn at night, but unfortunately when you water your lawn at night, you've got a problem with a lot more fungi on the lawn. So it's better to water your lawn in the mornings so that your upper leaf growth has got enough time to dry out. Because if your leaf growth has, or your upper leaf growth has got a lot of moisture on it, unfortunately, yes, you will have a lot of fungi developing. And then you've got dollar spot and black spot and all the different fungus, which is very difficult to get rid of.
Question with regard to fuchsia. I've got lots of fuchsias, but they haven't died down, and it's now the new season's growth. Do I leave it?
I would still recommend you to cut it back, because you want a lot more new growth, and if you were to cut it back, your plant itself would become a lot stronger. You'll get a lot more bushier growth. Now, I will definitely cut it back if I were you.
With regards to hydrangeas, and what care should we be taking of?
So hydrangeas do like a lot of water. If you haven't cut your hydrangeas down in winter, do not cut it down now, because you will have no flowers whatsoever. They do like an acidic soil. So if I were you, I will take some acid compost, mulch my hydrangeas with it, and just turn it in slightly around the base of the hydrangea.
Another question with regard to the lilies and some of the bulbs. Are the arum lilies available, and is it a good time to plant? And what other bulbs would be available at this time?
So, yes, some of the arum lilies are still available in the colorful varieties, and we will be receiving more arums in the next couple of weeks or so. At the moment, you have still got your amaryllis. There's some amaryllis varieties that's available, and then in probably about 2 weeks' time or so, we will get the dahlia bulbs in stock. So if you are a dahlia lover, it's probably about 2-3 weeks away from planting dahlias in the garden.
Another question with regards to, with the August winds that we've had, is drying out the gardens very quickly. Should we be doing something else? Should we be watering? You said you cannot water at night. Please guide us.
I think it's important to understand that the wind, yes, it does bring a lot of stress to the plants as well. So if you were to put down an irrigation on your watering or on your garden, rather put down a flood irrigation by putting down a hose on the actual ground and watering the root system of the plant. Because remember, a plant's strength is in its roots. It's not in its leaves. It's not in its flowers. So if you are able to water the plant's root system very well and keep that moist, your plant will survive even the strong winds that we are having at the moment. It's also important now for you to have a look at where the wind comes from, in which direction, and what you can plant where to act as a windbreak. Remember, if you've got a windbreak, if you plant a windbreak in the garden, if it grows 4 meters high, it will give you about a 30-meter wind cover or windbreak. So make sure that you do plant the right size windbreak, the right kind of windbreak, which can handle the wind, and don't necessarily make your garden too cold. Your garden has got to, if you've got too much evergreens in the garden and too much windbreaks, it actually makes your garden very cold. So try not to do that. And then, yes, do water your garden. Do not let it dry out, because, yes, unfortunately, the winds do dry it out.
Let's go into a couple of queries with regards to food security and what could be planted with regards to herbs and herbs and vegetables. Let's go through the varieties of herbs that would be available.
Your herbs of summer here is actually quite a bit, you know, and probably within the next month we will find everything else. So, yes, you will get your basil, you will get your fennel, you'll get your corianders, your thymes. It's a little bit early for rue, probably about a month or so we'll have rue, dunya. But the oregano's are available. It's a bit early for stevia. So, yeah, I would say, you know, if you are a herb planter, herb lover, if you like using herbs in the garden, you've never done so, go through to your local nursery and see what is available now. The variety is actually quite big, and if you were to give it another month or so, the variety will double up.
What about berries? You know, berries have become very fashionable, and we find that lots of it in the stores. Are they easy to grow, and what varieties do we have?
berries are very easy to grow, but unfortunately, yeah, berries is a slow grower, so there's not a lot of people growing berries. We've got some goji berries at the moment. We've got the Cape gooseberries. There's a Tay berry that we've got. We've got some cranberries. A little bit early for blueberries and blackberries, but that should be coming through soon as well. What you must remember with your berries is berries like to have to be in the sun, but to have a nice and cool root system. So you would be planting berries between your other plants, lots of ground covers and so on around them to cool down the root system. But also remember that your berries do like a very acidic soil. So if you are planting berries in your garden, do work in lots of acid compost, get some aluminium sulfate, water that in around the base of the plants. That will acidify the soil enough for you to have good success with your berries.
So would that not, would that disqualify for being in pots? I'm just looking at it because, you know, you need a cooling system, and when you have them in pots, the pots are normally very hot. Would you still continue, would you advise planting berries in pots?
Berries can do very well in pots, especially if you're putting the pots in an area where the pot itself stands in the shade and grows out, the plant grows out into the sun. So if you are able to water your plants often, if you are able to put water retaining products into the pot, if you are able to add your acid soil or your aluminium sulfate into the pot, yes, no, they will definitely work very well in the pot, no problem whatsoever.
What about chilies, tomatoes, brinjals? Are those all available or still a bit too soon?
The different varieties of chilies is not all available as yet. Yes, there is some of the chilies available, but it is still a little bit cold for most of the chilies to be available, for all of the chilies to be available. Brinjals, yes, brinjals is available. Tomatoes, yes, we have got the first tomatoes out. It's actually, we try and keep everybody happy because, yes, some people are in warmer areas. Some people have got more established gardens where there is more windbreaks and so on. So definitely the chilies is available, but you'll probably in about a month or so from now, you'll find the habaneros and the jalapenos and at the moment it'll be selected varieties.
And you know, it's been very fashionable now to have the designer vegetables where you have them in miniatures. You have the miniature cucumbers and the miniature, you know, all of these miniature vegetables. Was that now available, or is it a bit too soon, and when would customers be able to get them?
Shane, it's actually a very difficult one because one of the growers has started bringing in more and focusing more on growing miniature vegetables. But unfortunately, not a lot of growers have grown them as yet. So yes, you will find that the miniature varieties will be more available, but you'll probably find that within the next, say, 2-3 years, as people start growing more veggies in containers, they'll be a lot more available.
So what is available? Do you have anything in stock that people could purchase immediately?
Not at the moment, no. Probably in a month or two, yes, we will have. But yeah, unfortunately, not at the moment, no.
And finally, the question with hotels. Now there's hotels for chochas, hotels for butterflies, hotels for bees. Do you have any of those hotels? Do you stock them? And because there's been some queries around that.
We do stock the bug hotels, and the bug hotels is made up of all different kinds of material that you can bring all different kinds of bugs into your garden. We are trying to bring the wildlife back into our gardens, and that's one way for you of doing it, is to give them a place to grow and give them a place to nest in. Chochas is not bad for the garden. Very often people are thinking that once they see anything bad in the garden, they've got to go take out the poison and they've got to kill it. But no, live and let live, you know. There's a space for everybody in the garden, even for those bugs that very often do a lot of work that you don't know about. You know, one bug would be eating the other one. One bug would be keeping the other one at bay, one that you would actually not want in your garden. So, no, it's definitely something that you should be focusing on. And the bug hotels is available. I haven't got any butterfly hotels. Many years ago when I went to America, they even had ladybird hotels, and you could go and buy your ladybirds to bring it into your garden. And that'll be fantastic if we can catch up to that in South Africa as well.
Well, thank you very much for that. Now, before we conclude, just tell us again the address and what you have on you know, for today. So it's a trivia show. Tell us how to get there, both from, you know, and your times. What times are you open?
So our Clivia show is on at the moment. It is only on today still. If you're going to come here tomorrow, yes, you'll just get the normal common old colors again. You will not get those special colors. So we are out on Bayeswaard Deer Drive in Muldersdrift. Those of you who don't know where that is, once you take the N1 concrete highway and you take the Bayeswaard Deer off-ramp, you will turn 12 kilometers out of town. You'll find us on the right-hand side. If you were to put it into your Garmin or onto your phone, onto the maps, and you put in Garden World, that will bring you straight to us. Our opening times, 8 in the morning to 5 in the afternoons. So if you want to come and join us, make sure that you do so before 5 today. And the Clivia show will only be open till 4 o'clock. So make sure that you do get here before 4 o'clock. And it is an amazing experience. Our gardens are open. The Clivia show is open. Our tea gardens are open. The animal farmhouse for the kids is open. There's so much for you to see. Come through and enjoy it.
And you would also be available if anyone wanted to speak to you specifically?
I will be here the whole day. So yes, definitely.
Well, look out for JJ. Not difficult to find. Always running around all over, but a wonderful, wonderful experience. So that is turning off at Bayeswaard Deer Drive. You turn to 12, drive down 12 kilometers. We go 12 kilometers. Yes, it's, I must say, it's an amazing place to be. It's an amazing place. And once you're out there, you think you're out in the countryside, yet you are in the heart of Gauteng and Johannesburg. What a wonderful, wonderful getaway. So all of you, if you haven't still been to a Clivia show, please make sure that you throw in today. And that's all from us this morning. Thanks, JJ. You take care.
Thank you very, very much. And thank you to all the listeners for joining in the program.
Thanks, Star. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
And that was JJ from Rensburg telling us about the Clivia show and also what's to be done at this time of the year. That's all for me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.